Hello, Cologne Boys fans. This is Mac. Just jumping in at the beginning here to say I'm sorry if you were expecting episode 50, Murderous Self-Portrait. Unfortunately, the audio for that episode is real jacked up, and that's my fault, and I'm sorry about that. But wasn't able to fix it in time for this episode's release. So instead, you're getting episode 51. You're still getting an episode, and we'll have episode 50 as soon as I can figure out how to make it not sound terrible. Enjoy!
Hello and welcome to Columbo is the podcast all about the glossy, hedonistic, deceptive world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and joining me as always is Ben. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Mac.
This episode stars Ian Buchanan as the editor of a completely original magazine called Bachelor's World. Buchanan had a recurring or starring role on General Hospital, The Bold and the Beautiful, Days of Our Lives, and All My Children. So he's a bit of a soap...
was in All My Children?
He was in everything.
He was in Twin Peaks.
Ben will, as I have written in the next line, but Ben will most likely want to talk about his role as Dick Tremaine in the second season of Twin Peaks. I know you so well. Appearing as the victim is Deidre Hall, who starred as the eponymous Electro Woman in 1970s Batman ripoff Electro Woman and Dinah Girl. Perhaps most distracting to modern audiences will be the appearance of Mark Margolis as the victim's limo driver. Margolis starred as the wheelchair-bound cartel king Hector Salamanca on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. This episode also stars the Big Lebowski himself, David Huddleston, as the mayor, and features another appearance by John Finnegan as the chief of police, and there's a small uncredited appearance by Bruce Kirby as Sergeant Kramer. That was an incredibly hard intro to read for some reason. I think my brain is breaking, and it's probably this episode's fault.
Yeah, no, it's definitely this episode's fault. Let me, can I just add, when we're talking about, Deidre Hall, who played Diane Hunter, the victim?
Sure.
Or eventual victim. Uh-huh. That one other thing, speaking of soaps, that she was... Dr. Marlena Evans and Days of Our Lives for a whopping 3,006 episodes.
I guess you can mention that if it makes you
happy.
I
figure
to do
it's
so.
Important. Most people would probably know her from that more than anything else, but hey, you know.
Sure. There's also a cameo is an interesting word, but I did notice that Cameron, who maybe Ben will be familiar as the redhead from Samurai Cop. Plays one of the nymphs. She was also Gates McFadden's stand-in on Next Generation, and she played 47. She appeared in 47 episodes
As the stand-in?
Next Generation. Well, as like various characters, because she was also around. So they just put her in like Cardassian makeup and that kind of thing.
Of course.
Yeah.
Sure. No. I was too busy yelling at the screen. Actually, I will be honest with you. I did not take as many notes as I normally do. I spent a lot of it yelling, "Ugh, sure. Gross!" And you've got to be fucking kidding me.
Now I'm gonna take perhaps. I'm not going to say this is a good episode, so let me get that out of the way. But I'm going to go on record and say that this could have been a good episode pretty easily. This is not that far away from a good episode. The problem is the magazine. If it wasn't for the magazine, I think this would actually be a great episode.
Because
it's a really good subversion of the standard Columbo trope.
I'm glad you said something, because honestly, I'm with you on that. I was watching it, like in between shouting fits, I was reminding myself that it's a product of its time,
right?
Which is to say, 1990, and that's really evident in the costuming more than ever. Oh my lord, the wardrobe hurts, and we'll talk about that later, because there's some very specific personal hurts related to it.
Sure.
Basically, as I was kind of paying attention to actually like the plot beats and stuff, It genuinely struck me as like, this is not a bad conceit on like kind of putting a twist to the formula, and also just generally as a as a sort of plot for an episode.
The majority of the episode is like a normal Columbo. There's one difference. You don't actually see the murder.
Right.
But you do sort of see the events surrounding the murder and sort of you kind of see what Columbo is meant to see.
Right.
You kind of get sort of what Columbo is getting. You get all the wrong information, which I think is actually good. Specific case because of the way that it subverts it. But 75% of this episode plays like a normal Columbo, and then mm-hmm. there is a twist. So, I mean, we're just going to have to talk about it. If you haven't seen this episode and you, for some reason, care about spoilers about this not very good episode of Columbo, then stop listening here.
Then at least go watch it before you continue.
So this Ian Buchanan's character, he is...
Sean Brantley.
He is the editor of a men's magazine. See if this sounds familiar. He's the editor of a men's Naked Pictures nudie magazine.
Right. He lives in quote-unquote lifestyle magazine.
Lifestyle magazine. Yeah. He lives in a big mansion. He's surrounded by beautiful...
Please, it's the chateau.
The chateau. He's surrounded by...
We don't
by...
want to confuse it with the Playboy
it's
mansion.
What's that? Now, what is that?
Yeah. No, that's a totally different
that's
thing.
That's nothing.
That doesn't exist in Columbo.
I don't know what that is, and I will sue you if you talk about it. so he lives in a big... Yeah, I mean, basically, yes, he is... This is Columbo Goes to the Playboy Mansion.
But instead of Playboy bunnies, what are they?
They're nymphs. Nymphs.
I hate it. I fucking hate it.
It's a bad word to say.
It's everything about it's bad. Like the subject, you know, like I get it. It's like glitz and glamour and Beverly Hills. And like, that's certainly kind of at the apex of that thinking Hugh Hefner is like classy kind of era. Boy,
what a weird time.
That's a lot of venom in my voice. I understand why they kind of picked that as their sort of framing slash wannabe, but also
he's running this magazine. He's he's got, you know, all of these beautiful women living in the same chateau. It's a mansion.
And also, a menagerie of exotic animals, right?
Also, his publisher lives there as well. They formed this partnership between him as the editor and Diane Hunter is the publisher.
Yes. Let me point out, though, in the first scene where we're introduced to Diane, she is clearly the one handling like the graphic design and composition, which like that scene. Wow. Will look at it and go,
this is the thing. Like, sometimes I wish there was a visual component to this podcast and no more in this episode, where I would say there are several times where something appeared on screen where explaining it out in the podcast would not be interesting.
It sounds like fucking madness. It's too specifically
weird. Like, if you look at it, you instantly understand why it's weird. But it would take me 10 minutes to sort of convey to you why it's weird. Later when they're looking at tabloids and you can very clearly see that all the headlines are like bumper stickers that have been pasted on the front. There's so many weird images and like... Ian Buchanan's very strange off-putting smile. Like, there's so much stuff.
It's
just purely visual.
You know, it's one of those weird things where it's like, when I went and looked up how many episodes he had been in daytime dramas, that is to say soap operas, I was like, no, that checks out. He's soap opera handsome.
And his
smile definitely goes hand in hand with that. But like, there's so much in this episode that is visually arresting.
Right.
I think that's the nicest way to put it. But like, watching them put together a spread, and it's not nude. It's literally just like slapping cutouts from
an overhead projector reminds me a lot of like graphic design from about like 2 or 3 years ago, where it's just like free-floating images on like a flat color background with very like stark text.
There's part of the design work they did that reminds me of some of the stuff that Henry does.
Oh, sure. That's a right. That's an incredibly niche reference.
No, I know. But right. So there's
you're gonna have to, I think, unpack that one.
I will. There's a friend of ours who does really absurdist kind of art, specifically design art, and then also makes products out of it. I think his store is like Henry's Good Products, something like that. And they're ridiculous and wonderful in the way that only kind of weird internet bullshit can be.
Yes.
And anyway, if you're familiar with any of that stuff, which you may not be, it's pretty niche, but it's Zazzle, but it's amazing.
Zazzle.com. Search for awesome. To know specifically what we're talking about.
But so this graphic design for this nudie
magazine.
We are not
sponsored by Henry's Good Products, for the record.
No, and he owes us.
He does
for this one.
Frankly, I'm gonna be around his house with a thing to collect.
We'll I don't know. We'll extort a burger out of him.
Absolutely.
Anyway, but so, yeah. So, but that whole scene is sort of meant to establish that she is the one doing the actual work, whereas he is smooching models and taking photos of them nude.
Yeah, I mean, he is the photographer, which is a significant portion of the work of a magazine that's mainly for nudie pictures.
Right. Yeah, nudie mags and photos of, I don't know, his gun cabinet? way that he talked. Yeah, it's weird.
He's definitely, like, messing around, though. He's much more of the sort of what we would... he's meant to be sort of a fictionalized version of, like, the ideal of Hugh Hefner. Not Hugh Hefner himself, who is actually a very weird, gnomish sort of man. But this is sort of like the handsome... actual sort of playboy version of
right.
that.
Right. They wanted to emphasize the playboy aspects without using the word playboy and without casting someone as a lookalike, because they probably didn't want to get in legal hot water, which I think was a wise call.
So he's so from the beginning we see that he is having stress. There's stress between him. I'm just going to go as the episode presents it. Like, we'll deal with the twist later.
Of course.
But so we see that Brantley and Diane are locking horns because he is he's publicly romancing Tina, who's the sort of the most recent cover model, she's on the back burner. She also lives there. I think I mentioned that already, but she also lives in the mansion, She calls him up to the office, and they have this loud argument where that the secretary listens in on, where she's like, "What are you doing? You're supposed to be in love
basically,
with me or whatever."
Right. The whole thing where he's like, "Oh, but I only love you." Basically, he's like, "Yeah, hey, listen, I bone a lot of these girls, but I only love you." And she's like, "Yeah, you know, I could tell myself back when that first started, but I'm just over this. I'm going to sell my 51% to someone else."
She's going to sell it
to... Fuck you, dude.
She's going to sell it to Sir Harry Matthews. Yeah, she has the controlling interest in the company. So
right.
She gets
it's important. It's important that he's Sir, so you know that he's British.
He's very British, yes. Ian Buchanan is Scottish, but I cannot for the life of me figure out what accent he is trying to do.
That's my favorite part, though.
Several different accents at once.
It dances around, and there's a scene or two where he gets heated, and he slips into his native accent, and I love it so much because it's like he's trying to maintain this sort of generic British that has a hint of like. Kind of upper class Americana in it. Not Americana, but American.
Yeah, but it ends up sounding like I wrote on my notepad, I wrote down Irish ?
and
wrote Scottish next to it.
But. It has weird stuff. And then, like when he sort of is sort of heated in a moment, like really passionately acting, it goes a little Scottish. And I found that kind of amusing and charming.
So so she pages him on his Dick Tracy pager watch. They have these watches that are pagers.
They're like bracelets. They're like like flat gold bracelets. They're extremely like gaudy late 80s, early 90s wrist jewelry. And I love that he flips it open and it's just got that like that classic kind of like LCD.
Except text. It very doesn't. It very clearly has a sticker that has text.
That's like
on
my
it.
Favorite part.
Yeah. So he gets a text on his Dick Tracy sticker watch, and says to go meet him. He goes up, gets yelled at. She says, "I'm selling selling it off to Sir Harry," and then she leaves during a party, that big party that they're having at the house that. Sean Brantley is hosting, so he's there the entire night.
Because that's also one of the arguments is that she put up the initial capital for the magazine, and the only thing that he does is blow the money on llamas and reindeer and ladies and parties.
There's kind of a weird... there's a weird sort of thing about this, which I think... actually, this episode is wrong because... I mean, it's wrong for a lot of reasons, but I think it's wrong because she's going to sell this magazine, and they're going to get rid of this the Playboy Mansion. They're going to basically sell Playboy, but get rid of the Playboy Mansion in the 90s, which in the 90s that would have destroyed Playboy.
Like, yeah, probably.
Like that's the thing. Like now, sort of with you know, we can say that like. It was kind of it's kind of a relic of a bygone age, but like in the 90s, like that was Playboy. Like if they had just printed a magazine with naked pictures, it wouldn't have been anything. It wouldn't have been interesting, you know. The reason that Playboy as sort of a lifestyle brand, you know, whether you like it or hate it, I know which side you fall on, but like it or hate it, that was the allure of it. Was this like idea of this, you know, guy who came from nothing and he. Had a very specific fetish and he acted on it. He just, you know, he went crazy with it.
And basically it's his sex mansion. And it's hinted at when Brantley, like opens up his gun cabinet and, you know, has an exchange with Columbo about basically, you know, he's never fired any of the guns and that they're more or less like objects, you know, like objects of a desirable bachelor lifestyle.
Right.
And that really, that's such a great distillation of what the magazine, you know, and also what Playboy is all about. The idea of this, like, ultimate bachelor's life of sexy ladies and an expensive mansion and parties all the time.
Like, I don't understand if the magazine is hot now because of this crazy publicity stunt that they pulled. And there's like sexy personalities of these people. Why does Harry want to buy it and get rid of the person
and gut it,
who's in the news? Like, that's what I don't understand. Like, what is he buying? Just the name? Like, it's like a real sort of venture capitalism weirdness that like didn't really exist in the 90s. Like the idea that you would buy a thing and immediately discard the most interesting thing about it.
Yeah, it's not really explored a whole lot, and it's not presented like Sir Harry has a competitor to the magazine.
No.
It's just presented like he wants to acquire it, and I don't know if that's like if he's meant to be, you know, like a sort of Murdoch like, because he's definitely supposed to be like head of a media empire and you know and all of that business. But like, yeah, it's mostly just made clear that Brantley's expenditures are excessive and that they'll all get trimmed back. But like you say, it's like, it's a weird thought of like, well, if you ditch all of these things,
what is left, really?
What value is in the magazine?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. I can understand if he's saying, we'll come in and we'll say, like, I thought that when they sell it, like he's going to buy it and then be like, okay, No more crazy lavish parties every night, and no more you know, 500 models living in the mansion or whatever. But he's like, I'll give you a month to pack your bags. Like, it doesn't make any sense. He's the sole, apparently the sole photographer for the magazine as well.
Like, which is even crazier.
Yeah. Like, I don't understand what you're buying if you're not buying this guy and his time.
Yeah. Like, and it just like, I think it's just, I do think that they're meant to suggest like, oh, he's gonna turn this into a tightly operated ship. But you're out on the fucking street seems like you say to be throwing out, you know, one of the main kind of values rather than like just putting him on a very tight leash.
But that's the stakes of the episode, so that's what we have to deal with, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So she leaves this party, gets in the car with Cosner, her driver, Mark Margolis.
Yep.
And
her limo driver.
Her limo driver drives. She's got a white stretch limo, which I was like, that's a prom limo. But I forgot that the 90s, that was the limo. Like limos were
that. No, that was the limo.
That.
Yep.
Now they're more like sort of compact and elegant, but at the time it was the 90s. It was the, I mean, you know what I mean. Like, generally, they're not this crazy long, like super stretch limo. It's like more town cars, I think, are sort of the vogue now. But
there's a little more curve. Yeah, I know what you mean.
But this is very much a prom limo. This is a, you know, an all white, super stretch limo. So much so that Cosner, who is stopping off at a restaurant to get some smoked salmon to take across to Sir Harry
Scottish,
Matthew.
Not that domestic bullshit.
Well, I don't know why she needs to bring... She's traveling to Europe, right? Why is she buying Scottish
she hates
smoked
airline
salmon?
Food.
Oh, she's buying it to take on the plane. Okay,
this
I thought
is literally...
She was...
Yeah. Let's be clear. She's the kind of monster who's going to bring smoked fish into a plane and eat it where everyone will get to smell that for the remainder of the flight.
I mean, I think you could still smoke on a plane at this point, so probably smoked salmon would be a step up.
You're probably right, but in fairness, when you could smoke on a plane, they would also, instead of recirculating the air, they would pump fresh air through.
Yeah. Also, she's so disturbing a bunch of rich people in first class. I don't really care.
Okay. Fair dues.
So she goes to the airport, and then gets on a plane and, I'm missing the most critical step. So Cosner goes in, he hears a gunshot, runs outside, nothing, there's nothing in the alley. Everything seems fine. Goes back inside.
He looks around, doesn't check inside.
Seems like the most important thing to do would be to check inside, but no, he doesn't. He just walks, goes back in.
And then the chef basically is like, yeah, I hear like backfiring cars that, you know, hooligan teens are driving back there all the time. So whatever. Yeah,
also,
it's not
LA.
Gunshot.
People, it's LA in the 90s. People got shot. He goes back in, gets the food, brings it back to the car, and drives the person to the airport.
Right. And at this point, the privacy filter is up and she's completely wrapped up in her partition. Thank you.
I like the idea of a privacy filter, though.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically what
it
is.
It's like Twitter, but for reality, it's her privacy filters on.
Wrapped up in her furs and everything.
Yeah. So is it her? Is it someone else? We don't know. And then she gets on the plane and leaves. And now she is missing. Mm-hmm. Columbo comes in, does the normal Columbo stuff, searches around.
Yeah. But he comes in at the behest of his friend who works for Scotland Yard, who was put onto this by Sir Harry because she didn't show up for the meeting where she was going to sell her stock.
I didn't check. Did they use the name of the guy from Scotland Yard from the previous episode? Did you check that?
Do you remember what the guy's name was?
I don't remember what the guy's name was.
It's like Dirk.
Look it up.
Like, his last name was like Dirk.
Yeah.
So I guess I could look that up. I will at some point
just talking and won't shut up.
No, probably at the end of the episode. But anyway, so it's like, so he's basically brought in on this as a favor to, you know, his buddy across the pond.
Yeah.
And ostensibly because Sir Harry really would like to buy this magazine and then gut it. I don't know. Anyway, Yeah, and so that's where Columbo comes in to begin investigating.
Dirk was the name of the guy from Dagger of the Mind, so it's the same guy.
There you go. Same, there you go. Same hat.
Same hat. So yeah, so he comes in to investigate. He meets with, he accepts a bribe. Maybe the most blatant bribe in a Columbo so far.
Here you go. Cigars for days.
So he is talking to Brantley, just doing the sort of like, well, she's missing and we're not sure where to find her. And then helicopter lands and a person gets out and calls for Columbo. Again, this was, if only we had visuals in this podcast. It's the most 80s it's image so ever. Yeah. It's wonderful.
That was the other thing I noticed with this one is it really felt like someone was swinging hard. Like, we're going to have helicopters. We're going to do all these shots and we get all these great views of LA. And it was just...
We've hired like 90 models to like lounge around this pool.
Right, and pretend to be photographed for our interstitial sequences, which nobody asked for or wanted. Like, really, I'm sorry.
A couple of them this are also not... just like the same sequences
well. Right. But it's just the whole thing of like that first initial shock of like, all right, here's women in, you know, in swimsuits posing for cameras and making kissy faces at, you know, at the fourth wall. And I'm just like, honey, I came here for Columbo. This is not what I signed up for.
I mean, if you'll recall, as I said previously, Columbo and sex should be kept as far apart from each other as possible. Like on the periodic table of elements, they should be, you know, that's not a good, my brain is shutting down. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know. Moving on.
But they should be kept very far apart.
Right. Clearly they need to be kept in isolation.
I mean, the previous one, Murderous Self-Portrait, we had Columbo deals with polyamory, and now we're dealing with Columbo deals with a harem scenario. It's just,
I know. It's the era, but man, it's terrible. Like, you don't need to look at the age of this character. Why?
Yeah.
Why are you doing this to everyone involved?
Please leave Columbo alone. Please leave us alone.
Yeah, please. Yeah, please. Just no.
So he gets a helicopter ride. He accepts that. So Harry says, like, every one of these cigars is $26 an inch or something like that.
$6 an inch.
And then he gives him
1990. Yeah.
He gives him like 10 of the cigars.
Yeah.
In order to get him to expedite this.
Basically as case. A like, get on this, tell me anything you find. Like, yeah. It's just like you don't really care about her. You just want to buy the magazine.
It's straight up a bribe. And also I mean, I don't know what else to say. Like, he is accepting goods in exchange for, you know.
Yeah, ostensibly in exchange for, providing his expertise and time on the clock.
Yeah, it's a little different from him, like, accepting a meal or accepting, you know, that kind of thing that he's done in the past, which was sort of in the gray area. But this is, like, directly, here are expensive things, which, by the way, are Cuban cigars, which are illegal. Here is contraband.
Yeah, there's so much going on in that. And ostensibly, it's just meant to be in the, like, I'm wealthy, I'm successful, and, you know.
And Columbo is a weird slob who will take anything that you hand to him.
Yeah, and basically, it's the whole idea of, like, you know, I want this solved, I want justice, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that he was going to do that anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, which is probably why he takes the cigars, because it's not really influencing him at all.
I guess so.
I will say, after that scene, there was a thing in my head that went, what if Sir Harry actually did the murdering?
Sure.
And also, it didn't hurt that Brantley is kind of an idiot doofus.
Yeah.
For a lot of it. Like, for a lot of the episode. And so I had this sort of like, wait, what if this other guy actually set him up and like tried to get bad press around the magazine to tank the price that he'd have to pay for? You know, like I went a different direction with some of that stuff. Obviously, that's not how it panned out. Anyway.
I like the direction that it went. Like I actually ultimately am sad because I feel like they could have taken this concept.
This was a good idea wasted on...
Yeah, and moved it over to like a better episode, unfortunately.
So how much of the detail of the plot do you want to get into before that big drop 75% in?
Let's just do it. Because there's some standard Columbo investigate stuff. He finds hairs, he finds, you know, shell casing.
Yeah, tracing together the idea that like in the time that that the driver was in the restaurant and like the shot was made, that like then there was, you know,
there
the
was
privacy
under,
partition
there was
went up.
Under one of the seats, jumped up,
yep.
Shot her.
It's a storage seat in a limo.
Shot her, put her in the storage seat, took her place, and then went and got on the airplane and flew
and
away.
And then turned around and came back. And there, you know, and he follows the leads, and there's like only one person, only one of the nymphs who matches description didn't have an alibi for that time period,
which is Tina, who is his
the new crush,
crush,
and then Brantley's like 20, I don't remember what it was. Do you remember? I didn't write down the caliber of the gun, but it's basically this
tiny little gun
pistol has been fired. It's the shell from his pistol that they find on the ground outside of the. A car, you know, and it's got his prints all over it, et cetera, et cetera. So from the hair, from all the evidence, Columbo, basically accuses him of like disposing of the body somewhere on the grounds of the chateau.
Yep.
And so and then they comb over it. Yeah. With all the cops in the world.
They go through this like thing. They search everything. They search the chimney. Columbo looks in the chimney, which is amazing.
Yep. He's in like, and then the scene with like the waiters and like, they really just want to emphasize like, hey, we pulled out all the stops.
One of my favorite things is he's waiting in the pond, but he kept his jacket on. So the bottom of his jacket is wet. It's like, what, why? What is Columbo? Why? You're an idiot.
Yeah. He's just like, well, it's a raincoat. It's going to get wet anyway. I guess. I don't know. Okay. But, one of the things we didn't mention is that so in the midst of all of this, there is a point where Brantley has basically told the cops, or not the cops, the press. And so the press just shows up at the chateau and is bombarding him with questions, and he sicks them on Columbo basically to stir up all this.
That's where we get the mayor
frenzy.
And the chief of police in. There's a thing, you know, at City Hall where they say Columbo lays out all his evidence. Which is kind of where it starts to become suspicious because Columbo never has to like answer questions about his
and when they're like, one of the things they say that struck me was like, even Korean TV is here, and it's like, okay.
But so Columbo has to go and make his case directly to the mayor, like say, I'm going to do this, I have all this evidence, and the mayor's like, all right, well, go for it, and then. Diane shows up. She just appears back at the mansion, takes off her glasses dramatically, and there she is. She's alive. She's not dead.
Makes a joke about all the press, and so she thought she'd come back, ha-ha, and then Brantley...
I have to say one thing, though. Wouldn't they have a record that she was on the plane? The airport thing is kind of where this all falls apart. Because
you mean like the whole going through customs,
right? Going through customs, going on an airline, which even though airline security is not as tight as it was as it is now, they still keep a record of whether you get on the plane or not. So they would know if there was someone on the plane.
That was part of the deal with Tina, was that she was out of pocket for 48 hours, which was long enough for her to fly to London
and then fly back
as herself. Gotcha. I mean, which also seems like a thing that Columbo would have checked on to see if, you know.
Because she'd have to provide ID at the border. And you can't just you can't just wrap yourself in a scarf and be like, whatever.
Yeah, that's me. No, I'm not taking my scarf off. Definitely me in the photo.
If she was flying on a private jet, it's different because private jet customs are very different. Like rich people have a completely different rule set to the rest of us.
Yeah, the short version of it, without getting into the the nitty gritty is just like the more money your mode of transportation costs, the less they seem to give a fuck.
Yeah.
So yeah, if it was a private jet, for sure. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So that's kind of all of the, the big area where it's kind of like,
and that's like the first. It's 130 minutes with no commercials, and that is the first like
100 minutes easy.
110 maybe. It is. Well, it's an hour and 30 minutes. It's the first 100 minutes would be 10 minutes after it ended. But yes, it's the first hour and 10 minutes of the episode. And so she comes back and she reveals that, oh, well, now the magazine is worth even more money.
Yeah.
Now,
well, and there's this, there's that scene like right when she's doing kind of the presser where Brantley like hands Columbo champagne and is like a toast. And he's like, I tried to tell you, you know, and basically is also like, thanks for making us fucking rich. And Columbo just looks at him and like pours the champagne out.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of like, it legit made me feel bad for him getting used by these people. Which I think is the point. But.
I guess, I don't know. I love that. I love that. So immediately upon getting back, she says, like, well, now that it's worth so much more, she says in a meeting with Sean and Sir Harry.
Sir Harry. Yeah.
She says, well, now that it's worth so much more, I'm going to sell it to him. And he says, well, what if I add $2 million to the asking price? And she says, make it £2 million. And then we got a deal. And so he does. She's going to sell it off. To him, the deal is not finalized. So Ian Sean Brantley goes to her room and has a short conversation with her and is like, I was thinking how much easier it would be if you weren't here. And then he snaps her neck like a pretzel rod. Ninja snap on her neck.
Yeah, that whole scene is so funny because if you watch his motion, it's so ridiculous. And then the Foley is like they had a twig and they broke a twig. Like, I shit you not, it is the lamest like sound effect for a neck ever.
It sounds like he gave her a chiropractic adjustment, but no, apparently he murdered her.
Right,
because he's a ninja. He done to murder. He's a ninja photographer / editor. So he just like snaps her neck. Ninja style, and then Columbo.
Right, and then
the mayor having a press conference. You know, the press going like, "Ah, how much of our taxpayer money did you waste on this search?"
Right, on this wild goose chase, and
right. Which, by the way, the person in trouble in that is Sean Brantley and Diane Hunter,
because
they deliberately did this in order to.
They would be in cuffs.
If you are purposefully not telling the police something in order to make them waste their time, in order to drive up publicity, that is a crime. Like, very recently.
Even in Beverly Hills, weirdly.
There have been very recent high-profile cases of people being charged for that exact crime. It is a thing. But no, apparently in this case, like if you get one over on the police, you're good.
The LAPD are just like, listen, we got to save face because we got a bunch of bullshit coming this decade that's going to make us look even worse.
Well, yes, the LAPD had a rough 90s, let's say that one.
LA had rough 90s,
and the LAPD were mostly responsible for it. So he's having this press conference, and in comes... our good friend, Bruce Kirby, and says that, Mr. Mayor, she's disappeared again. And he's like, she disappeared again? She disappeared again. And they do a little bit. And then,
Let Columbo anywhere near the chateau.
And then cut to Columbo speeding in his little car over to the chateau. To the tune of, I'm going to play the theme of this episode. This episode has a musical theme. I can't believe that we're this far into the recording when we haven't talked about it yet. But
I was hoping you'd forget.
It's amazing. I have one clip this episode and it's this theme. So let's hear 90s Columbo theme.
God. No, just... I hate it so much.
Lieutenant Columbo.
This old man on a Seinfeld synth bass.
Yep, yep.
It's
that's
pretty amazingly terrible.
Yeah, it's really, it's a great, I mean, the whole soundtrack is like, there are some like pop songs that are in ostensibly
We open with, a pop song in this episode.
Yep. And that's part of it where it just makes me go, because it's just so out of character for the show in so many ways.
Yeah, that's true. It's the first, I think, the first example of a licensed song that isn't, you know, some sort of, you know, toccata or whatever. Like, this is the first licensed song that has appeared in a Columbo.
I know, it's so much. Worse is, like, the score for this is all done by someone who was very deep into the, like, late 80s, early 90s, like cheap synth sort of vibe. You know, not really synth wave, but just in that like real basic sort of. One of the things I wrote down was
Dick D. Benedictus, who did the music for Matlock, Police Story, Diagnosis Murder, Jake and the Fat Man. The Carol Burnett Show.
I feel like there was a specific music credit to somebody that like maybe it was him. I should have gone and looked him up, and that's on me. But oof, boy. I mean, this really it's like, now this isn't really a music description, but it's like Poochie from The Simpsons. If that makes sense. Like, it's got that sort of sickly 90s vibe of like, hey, the kids are into the cool hip hops and raps and not like any understanding of
has a very sweaty vibe altogether as far as like relevance. They're really trying to make Columbo cool and sexy, and he isn't, and he never will be.
And putting a bunch of women in swimsuits that are riding up their cracks doesn't make the show sexy. It just makes it uncomfortable. So Columbo races back to the chateau and
he confronts Brantley. Mm-hmm.
Basically, Brantley is like, they're never going to let you dig through the chateau. You can't prove anything. You know, like he's crowing about, because Columbo's like, I looked up the shit. I know that like if she's gone for over a month, control of her stock just rolls to you. Like, y'all basically had a tontine, which is not super legal, but hey, whatever.
He calls the phone company and he has them page her.
Yeah,
And the sound goes off, and she's in the walls. They're doing work on the bathroom, and he has
stuffed her in the drywall, like behind the insulation. Drywall. It's like, how did you manage to do all that without the contractors noticing that you fucked their work up?
Yeah, well, he's an amazing drywall man. That's not explained in the episode, but he's actually great at drywall.
I mean, he's an international, you know, Playboy sexy times man. Of course,
a contractor. It's not explained in the episode, but that's how he got his start. Hey, everybody's got to start somewhere.
Yeah. And so Columbo like unzips the fur storage bag that he has stuffed her corpse into.
Right.
Pulls out her arm, cuz he says, as soon as I saw that
stop touching the crime scene.
I know, right?
What are you doing? Like, I understand that there's a thing and they're making a beeping noise, but it doesn't matter. It can continue to make that beeping noise.
But it's literally, this is the thing, right? Old Columbo has now reached that point of like, it's more important for me to dunk on this guy than it is for me to not contaminate the crime scene. And in fairness, what is it that's on the thing? Is it gotcha?
It says gotcha.
He flips open the thing basically to dunk on this dude.
Morbid. Just a reminder, this is on a bracelet that is on a dead corpse of a human being, Columbo, that you are using as a prop in your petty revenge. You know what? You know what? We said some stuff earlier about Columbo not being a sadist. This episode, I don't know, borderline.
I think, see, that's the thing, right? I feel like that the argument about whether or not he's a sadist, like, maybe skews more towards sadism in these in the later episodes, because stuff, they just seem to stop giving a fuck.
Yeah. Like, it seems like that part is less about justice and more just about, like, fuck you, I'm smarter than you.
Yeah, it's the, oh, you dunked on me? Fuck you, I dunked on you and your family.
Yeah, earlier on, Columbo would solve a crime and he would use his brain, but he would, like, he did it out of a sense of justice. This is not, this is petty. This is, Columbo, you're better than this. Or you were better than this. I don't know. Now
I don't know. I don't know. It could get worse from here on out. I mean, we'll find out. I know. You keep telling me, and I keep wanting to not believe it, and yet here we are.
Progressively, it gets worse every episode.
Yeah, really, really. This one was, ooh, boy.
It's a bad one. It's a bad one.
But that conceit, though, it's right? Great. That conceit of, like, hey, this. The data is leading us both to this. And sure, this is not the first time that they've concealed the actual moment of murdering from the audience, but that run up and then oops, they literally did this. They used him to get something, you know, and then also ostensibly, you know, Brantley participated in this because it gave him cover to actually turn around and murder him and be like, well, she disappeared again. It's normal. Oh, wait, no, she's gone for good. Well, I didn't know. How was I to know? We literally just did this thing. Yeah. It's a good idea, but...
It's a good idea, but it's very poorly executed, I think it's safe to say.
Well, I think the trappings drag it down more than anything.
Yeah. Starting with the clothing... let's talk about Brantley and his love of pumpkin colored orange things.
Oh, well, so there's not just, okay, there's a lot here. So this is like peak, this is peak sort of like we've crested through the 80s and we're now in those early 90s. So like, so Brantley's dressed as this sort of like, in vogue, you know, playboy who's kind of, you know, clearly supposed to be a fashionable dresser. And at the time, he was. However, what that entails is like blousy silk button-up shirts that are always buttoned all the way up, you know, to the collar with no tie or anything. Oversized, double-breasted jackets that just look bad and also are worn just unbuttoned. That's like a staple of the entire... like four seasons of Kids in the Hall.
Sure.
Like seriously, every suit they wear is very much in line with the double-breasted jackets you see on him. He has like some asymmetric pumpkin shirts that he wears. And then his pants are not... his pants are not the apex of this style, but they're on the way to it. And so they're this sort of... they're not quite harem pants, and they're not hammer pants, because hammer pants are like looser, like more flowy. Basically, they're like parachute silk. Anyway, but these are on the way to a brand of pants that unfortunately I know better than I should, which is Z Cavarici pants.
Sure.
So these are pants that basically kind of have a jod. I guess it's jodhpur like. No, maybe that's the boots. I always get these. I mean, basically, like breeches. They kind of balloon out around the sort of hips and thighs, and then they taper down towards the bottom. And he's got some of that. And then, like the style of belt he's wearing has like the sort of like metal tipped end, and then like the buckle is this specific kind of ornate thing. Again, these are very specific to the era, and part of why I know these is,
and he's got that kinda, he's got that high waist,
yeah, high right, they're high waisted pants, yeah. And the reason I know it is because there definitely was a point in high school where I kind of dressed similarly, at least the like the sort of flowy shirts and the kind of, the bloomy pants garbage and all that. One thing he does that I really fucking hate is he wears like Prince Albert slippers, basically like okay. velvet, you know, like the low cut loafers that have nothing on them. And then he wears them with just white socks, just like what look like athletic socks.
Yeah.
And it's just, it drives me fucking nuts.
There's the women are dressed generally sort of in loungewear, 80s loungewear, fairly unremarkable, with one exception. I want to talk about one thing that Tina is wearing when she's arrested. She's wearing this outfit. It is insane. I wrote down all the parts of it because I want to go through them bit by bit.
Yeah.
She's wearing multicolored snakeskin pants. They're like rainbow snakeskin pants. She is wearing belly dancing coin belts that are jingling the entire time. Mm-hmm. She is wearing a mock turtleneck sort of Carmen Miranda sleeve crop top.
Yeah, and it is cropped at the end point of the boob,
yes.
basically. Like it is so high up.
It's very high.
I was amazed that...
That there's no skin showing, that there isn't any, like, under boob, yes. It's very, well, that it's there's very not, there, nearly
there's
there.
Not, like, a bra visible. Like, it's so high up. It's unreal.
Then she's wearing huge earrings as well. It's a lot. It is.
It's so much. And there are other outfits. Like, there are outfits that, that Brantley and Diane Hunter's secretary wears that have, like, you look at the shoulder pads and you're like, you're just a football player now.
Right.
Like, these are so enormous that there's no, we have overdone it. We have over accented. As an aside, a friend just showed me an image from a runway show, that is, I don't know. I didn't bother to track down like what designer, but it is like, just ostensibly this massive bundle wrap of cloth that is so big that you cannot make out that there is a human form inside it. And then you just get to watch it waddle down the runway. And it's like that level of exploding of the human form in kind of clothing shape. It's madness. This episode's so full of it.
There's that the pillbox sort of hat that Diane is wearing when she gets on the plane. She's wearing this sort of strange pillbox hat with a scarf wrapped around it that actually looks sort of good when she is wearing it, when she's pretending to be someone else. Pretending to be her. She's sort of got it styled in a way that's like, okay, I don't like it, but I understand it's a style and it's going for something. Later we see Tina wearing the same thing, and she has it. It looks bad when Tina's wearing it. She has the scarf just like wrapped around her head like gauze, like she had a head injury.
Yeah, it's. I mean, so much of it is just really bad, and
it's
like,
just a lot of nonsense.
Yeah, it's. Oh, I cringe. But there are a lot of really awful costumes, and it's just one of those things of like after a while I just went numb because it's just so constant that it's like I just am like, all right, yes, Brantley's wearing some fucking trash again. Like there's not, you know, it's like this is just what I have to put up with to get through this episode. and again, some of that is also because like I, you know, there is a young teen version of me that thought that was really cool.
Perhaps
and at the
greatest,
time, maybe it was, but certainly not in my school.
Is a crime of fashion. I actually do. I didn't clip it, but I do have it here. I'm going to play. This is where they're going out to this the shopping spree. They sort of set up these shopping sprees. This is his alibi for the actual murder, is he's out with the models on the shopping spree. But I want to play a little bit of the dialogue of the
women.
When Columbo is getting in, because it's so like, it feels so like real in a weird way, in a way that doesn't feel like Columbo, because the Columbo feels kind of stagey and weird, but this I just wanted to play this dialogue because it's very strange to me.
All right, get in.
What?
Get in.
Here, over here. Sit here.
It's your
Hi.
There we are.
Who's this guy?
How's he going?
Bill, how are you?
I didn't know he was coming.
Maybe I'll just sit on the edge here. So we just, there we go. There we go. Thank you. Ooh. There we are.
So if you just imagine an hour and a half of that, you basically know what this episode is. It's just a lot of Columbo sort of trying not to disturb women.
Yeah, and look away, and every now and then, thank you very much, and you know, stuff like that. As he,
and for some reason,
awkwardly...
they all want to fawn all over him, even though he is just this weird, gross man who showed up at the mansion.
Well, I mean, everyone except for like the first photo shoot that he walks in on when he shows up. As which is creepy because Brantley is like, all right, now move your hands lower. And it's like, all right, I get it. You're telling her to take her hands off her breasts. Like, you guys don't have to emphasize it so much. We can infer from the fact that he is shooting her and she's not wearing a top. But like, Columbo walks in the back and she immediately is like, who's that creep in a trench coat? Like,
which
you
is
know,
fair. Which is
which I think is a fair assessment, but I don't understand how it goes so quickly from like, who is this creepy dude who looks like he is like a flasher, you know,
who's just wandering around like just confused, a
this campus,
confused
like
man.
He's looking for he's looking for God, why did I blank on her name? Other than the fact that I just want to forget this whole episode exists. He's looking for Diane's like quarters and he's in like the wrong wing and stumbles into basically a dorm full of young women and they're just like, come back and visit us later, you know, and it's like, I like Columbo, but I don't understand why you're all just falling over this disheveled old man.
I don't know what this episode is going for, I don't know why it does the things it does.
We know what it's going for. It's just so. It's gross and we don't want to give it any credit, which I think is fair. I think if there's anything to take away, it is that the way that they play with the Columbo formula is interesting, and it is largely wasted on this episode because the episode is just such a time capsule of an idea of what masculine sexuality is all about.
As we talked about last episode, this is old man horny. This is like this is what old men, you know, think being sexy is. Unfortunately, that's what the 90s. That's what the 90s was. The 90s sexuality was sort of was commandeered by old horny men, and that's what it was. That's just what everything was. I mean, not that now is super different, but that's just the soup that they were stewing in.
Sure.
I wish I had not said that particular turn of phrase.
I also wish you hadn't said that, and yet here we are.
And yet here we are at the end of the episode.
Oh,
that's going to do it for this week. this has been Columboys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And just one more thing.
Yeah.
You used me to get a lot of free publicity. You made a fool of me, but I gotta hand it to you. You did it well.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.